Now, we're holding the last words of Ayin Tes Amud Beis. We started talking about in the Mishnah various cases where a person comes back to town where we know he was a miyuchas, he was a kohen, for example, and he comes back saying with a wife and children, and we have various possibilities. There can be that he's saying, this is the wife that I first left with, and these are her children. He can say that my wife, which I left with, passed away, and these are her children. We can have, he says, he married a wife outside the country, and these are her children. Or we had that he says, I married a wife, she passed away, and these are her children. And in the Mishnah, we talked about the various possibilities when he needs to bring proof about each one of them. The basic idea being, the wife, if he took her with him from here, then he doesn't need to bring a proof now that she was a miyuchesis, because that was already checked out when he first married her. As opposed to the children, it all depends. He said, provided that kruchin achareha, that they're attached to her. And then we said, where we know that the wife was kosher, then we assume the children are kosher as well, because kruchin achareha. But if not, then we may have to bring a proof about them. And sometimes we may even have to bring a proof about the wife herself if he married her in another country and we don't know whether the proper investigation was done. So now the Gemara says on this, Omer Ish Lakish Lo Shonu El B'Kodshei Gvul. All of this that we're talking about, we say that the children are kruchim, and therefore we can assume that once we know the mother's status, then automatically we know the kid's status. That would only apply to Kodshei Gvul. Only that by virtue of that, they're able to eat truma, which is called Kodshei Gvul, meaning the kodshim of the borders, in the sense, because you can eat them throughout, you can eat truma throughout the borders of Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to kodshim in the Bais Mikdash, or Besuv in the Bais Mikdash, or whatever. There you need something more than that. There you need something more than chazaka. Here, basically what it is you have a chazaka. They're kruchim achareha, therefore whatever their mother's status is what they are. But to go so far, avol yuchsin, but when it comes to saying that they're koyanim miyuchasim, and therefore to say that they can serve in the mismikdash, to say that in future generations you have, once you trace back to them, then you know you have a family of good koyanim or miyuchasim, then Resh Lakish says, Lord, no, we don't say that you're going to go that far, because after all, there is only chazaka over here. Tosfos refers to other Gemaras that seem to be saying that it's enough for a person to say, this is my son, and he's a Kohen, and he can eat Truma. And there it doesn't even mention Kruchin Achareha. So one possibility is that Gemara is going according to Rav, and Rav is able to argue with Mishnayos. We do say the expression Rav Tano Ho Poli. But another point is that our Gemara versus that Gemara in Ksuvos may be disagreeing on the question of Malin Mitruma LeYuchsin, which we touched on earlier in our Masechta. When you see somebody eating Truma, can you automatically assume on that basis that he's a Miyuchas? And therefore say that he's 100% a Kohen. So Rav over there may be following the opinion that you can't anyway, so therefore nothing wrong with eating truma because we're not gonna say based on that that he's a miyuchas. Whereas here we would be holding according to the opinion that Malin the truma miyuchas. Anyway, that's what Shlokish says, that in the case of our Mishnah, then the father comes and says, for example, this is the wife that I first left with here years ago, and now these are her children, and the children are kruch and achareha, then Shlokish is saying that's still not enough to make it that these children should be miyuchasim. Maximum is they can eat truma.
If the Kohen loses his status, by not being able to be verified as miyuchas, does he remain a kohen?
So then he's called a kohen chazaka. We actually talked about that at the beginning of the parak. We said gedolah chazaka. We had those three families of kohenim, bnei chavaya, bnei hakoit, etc., who were among the Jews who came to Eretz Yisrael at the beginning of the second mishmikdash. They couldn't bring solid proof that they were kohenim. So we said they're allowed to eat truma. We had two opinions over there. Are they allowed to eat truma d'araisa? Or are they maybe only allowed to eat truma d'rabanan? Yeah, in general, all kohenim nowadays are kohenim chazaka. No kohen nowadays has documentary proof tracing them all the way back to a kohen who served in the mishmikdash, who served in the Sanhedrin, or the various other possibilities that we learned a few days ago of how you can verify 100% that somebody is a kohen. Nobody has that. All kohenim nowadays are kohenim chazaka. when Mashiach comes, as we learned earlier in the Perek, then Mashiach, or the Yohan Navi, is going to verify who's actually a Kohen and who's not. Nowadays, there are some families that there's more of a stronger Masorah on them that they're Kohenim. It's said, for example, that the Rappaports have a particular Masorah about that. But other than that, even they are not Kohenim Yichos, they're only Kohenim Chazaka. Anyway, it continues the Gemara. Rav Yochanan Amatul B'Yochsin. Rav Yochanan says, no, when the father says over here, this is my wife and these are her children, and the children are Kruchen Achareha, and we have proof about the wife, whether because she originally left here and therefore we know her, and we know that she was vetted before she married him, or he brings proof that the wife that he married in Midnesayam is a Miyuchasis. Either way, Rav Yochanan says that that we're saying that raya is good enough for the children is even good enough for Yochsin to say that they are definitely Kohen, that they are definitely Kohenim because of the Kruchim Acharev. And the Gemara points out, for as the Rabbi Yochanan Lachaymei. Now Rabbi Yochanan in that is going according to his Svara, the Omer of Chiva Abba, Omer of Yochanan, Malkin al Chazakas. A person can be given Malkus based on something involving Chazaka. So even though there's no Eidos, we have a chazaka. So, we can have a chazaka, for example, that certain truma is tome, where a person will be getting malchus then for eating it. So we can do that. We can give malchus based on, even though something was only established based on chazaka, the soklin, the sofen, alpia chazakas. For that matter, also says Rabbi Yochanan, you could even give skila or srefa based on a chazaka, as the Gemara is going to say in a little bit. For example, two people we have a chazaka of them being mother and son or whatever, and there can be missus based in involved if we end up seeing them having relations. So even though we don't have solid proof that this is a mother and that these two are mother and son, nevertheless the chazaka is enough for that purpose. The Gemara, by the way, in Cholin discusses a number of different sources how we know of this concept that chazaka is so strong. The Gemara brings a bunch of possibilities over there. It starts with the fact that we can shech an animal after all and eat it, even though there's a slight possibility that there was a hole right there in the windpipe or in the esophagus where you shechted it, and now you're not going to be able to show it afterwards. So the Gemara says that's not really a solid proof, but the Gemara ends up bringing a bunch of other proofs over there for the concept that we can rely on chazaka. We see, for example, also in connection with parents, the Torah tells us, for example, that if a person hits his father and wounds him or curses his father, he's chayev misa. Now, after all, you can never know 100% for sure that this person is his father. It's only a chazaka. And nevertheless, we see that a chazaka is strong enough for such purposes. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, is making the same point over here. However, the Eid Sofen Truma al Chazakas. However, Rabbi Yochanan says when it comes to burning Truma, when you have Truma that there's a Chazaka that it was Tomei, but you don't know for sure, you don't have Eidim, then you can't burn it. Maximum you can do with it is Toilim. You suspend it, meaning in other words that you don't eat it, but you don't burn it either. Because after all, there was a mitzvah in the Torah not to burn Truma that's Tahor. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan is following his own Shitta then in saying that when it comes, that chazaka is such a powerful thing, that therefore he can also be saying now that the father has the ability to say, this is my wife, those are her children, and because kruchim achareha, then therefore we can, therefore that chazaka is strong enough to say that yes, these children are indeed hers, and therefore the chazaka for, and therefore the eidos for her also goes on her children, even though for her children it's only a chazaka. So the Gemara says, Malkin al Chazakas. Let's explain what Rabbi Yochanan means. What does he mean? We give Malkus based on a Chazaka. So I gave an example before involving Truma, but actually the Gemara gives a better example. Suppose a woman has a Chazaka among her neighbors that she's Nidda. Now, women in those times used to wear different clothes when they were Nidda. We learned from Ksubas, actually, that a husband has to get his wife new clothes every so often. He gets her, for example, a new outfit once a year, for example, and then he gets it for her in the winter time. She wears it when it's still new and warm, and then afterwards, when it's worn out and not so warm, then she can use it for summer clothing, and she can also use some of the ones from previous years for Nidda clothing. So now, how would a woman's neighbors know that she is a nidda? often because she would be wearing such clothes. So if she does, if she wears those clothes, and therefore she has chazakah among her neighbors that she's a nida, and then her husband ignores that and has relations with her by the loy ka'alam, a shum nida, her husband is going to get malchus for the fact that he had relations with a nida. The whole fact that she was a nida was established based only on chazakah, doesn't matter, it's still enough to give him malchus. That's so Rabbi Yehuda said that in the name of Rab, and therefore that bears out, what Rabbi Yehuda just says by himself, so therefore that bears out what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that based on chazakah alone, we can give malchus. Why it is we're mentioning that only the husband gets malchus, what about the wife? There's a number of different explanations, among them that she got, there are explanations that Amma says, for example, in one of his struggles, sure, she gets malchus also, it always takes two to tango, and since she's also having relations with him, when she's in Nida, she should also get malchus, says the Amma. However, the Gemara is not mentioning that, Rabbi Yehuda is not mentioning that, because there's not that much of a chiddush in it. Of course, she was wearing these big nidus, so therefore she demonstrated with that she was in Nida. The chiddush is, the husband didn't do anything to demonstrate that she's in Nida, and still the chazaka is enough to give him malchus. And then there's various other explanations, including the Meiri says that, let's say you could have, it wasn't necessarily that she knew about it. He could, let's say, come home and she's asleep and he goes and has relations with her. So then she's not getting malchus, obviously, but he would. So various explanations why the Gemara phrases it like that, by the loiker, rather than saying shneim loikim or something to that effect.
Isn't it supposed to be private, supposed to hide the fact that she's a nida?
Is she supposed to hide the fact that she's a nida? I mean, she shouldn't go shout it from the rooftops, but practically speaking, especially when women were home all day, it's not something that you could hide, and the normal thing would be that she would wear different clothing when she was a nida.
At home,
yeah. At home, we're talking about at home, in the halls or whatever. Yeah, we're not talking necessarily walking around in the street. So we see from that, so we see what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that you can give malchus based on only a chazak. What about sofen besofen al chazakas? When Rabbi Yochanan says that you could give skila or srefa, this is based on chazaka. So, for example, kidu rabba bar avuna. To amar rabba bar avuna, for example, we have what rabba bar avuna says, ish v'isha tinek v'tinekas shehi gibu b'secha bayis. If you have a man and a woman together with a boy and a girl who all grew together in the house, so everybody assumes that she's his wife, and these are her children. Now, we don't have solid address about it. They came from someplace else. We don't have any solid proof that they're married and that these are her children. Nevertheless, niskol and zalzev and nisrof and zalzev. Nevertheless, there can be skila or slaver given for one to the other. Because if the boy from 9 years old, of course, has relations with the one who's assumed to be the mother, well, then that's an isr skila. If the man has relations with the girl who's assumed to be his daughter, then Nisraf and Zalzev, and those be, then they'll be safer. For example, as we have the example, Amr of Shimon Levi, Amr of Shimon Pazi, Amr of Shimon Levi, Mishum Bakapara, Maisa Be'isha Shabosli Yerushalayim, it happened once that a woman came to Yerushalayim, Tinet Murkav Lak Sefer, with a child riding on her shoulders, so it seemed like she, like this is her son, Ve'ik Dilatu, and sure enough, she raised him as her son. Then when he got older, he had relations with her. There was Aiden. Now, in all these cases, by the way, we're talking about there is Aiden Vasra for the actual act. There of course, has to be Aiden Vasra for the actual Bia, or for something leading to Bia, in order for there to be Mises based. No question about that. What we mean is there was no Aiden in the first place that this is a mother and this is a son. For all we knew, that could be, for all we knew, she could have adopted him or something. Nevertheless, they have even based him or stole him. They brought him to Basin and gave him Skila. Not because they knew 100% that he's her son, but because he was attached to her in the way that as he was growing up, in the way that children are attached to their mothers, and therefore that was enough of a chazaka to say that he is indeed her son. So we see that a chazaka can be used even from this aspect. On the other hand, continues Rabbi Yochanan, the ein sofen truma al chazakas. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan had said, we don't burn truma based on a chazaka. When we have only a chazaka, that truma is tome, that's not reason enough to burn it, then, sort of, that says Rabbi Yochanan. On the other hand, so now, in fact, the Amr of Shimon Lakish Servin Al Chazakas, Rabbi Yechon Amr in Servin. In fact, you have Machoikas, just like we had before, Machoikas, between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechon, about the case of our Mishnah, whether the children are Miuchosim or not, where Rish Lakish said they only have Chazakah, they can only eat Truma, but no more than that. And Rabbi Yochanan said they're actually considered miyuchasim. So also, when it comes to truma, you have a separate machlokas whether if you have chazaka, if you have only a chazaka, the truma is tamei. Where the shlokish says that's reason enough to actually burn the truma, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying that not. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan is being consistent with his shita in saying that you don't burn truma in a case like that. And the Gemara continues, va'azu v'tamayu. Now both Rabbi Yochanan and the shlokish are going according to their respective shittas in saying that. The Tanan, namely like this. We learn in a Mishnah. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Taras. Tinek she nimtza b'tzad ha'isa. If you find a child near a batch of dough, the dough was supposed to be tahor. The dough was dough of truma and has to be kept tahor. Or for that matter, it could even be cholin shanasu al taras hakodesh or taras truma or whatever, and has to be kept to the standards of tahor. Anyway, ubotzik b'yadei. Now the child has a piece of dough in his hand. The question then would be, did he? So Rashi learns that there's no question he took that piece of dough from the batch. The question then would be, is the child tamei or not? Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that no, the child was definitely tamei. The question is, did he necessarily take from that dough? Is it possible that somebody else came in here and gave the child a piece of the dough? And in that case, he himself didn't touch the dough.
But a child doesn't sit half of your parents and it's got to be cut out.
Well, so the point is, so Rashi, that's how Rashi learns. Rashi learns the child is only suffic tamei, as the Gemara is going to go on to point out, because children often play in areas where they become tamei. Tosfos refers to actually a brisa, a tesefta, that says that you often have, it's a little kid, we're talking about a little kid, who is, as Moses is going to say soon, in by Vasli Shoal, he's not even old enough to be asked what happened with you. So women are always picking him up and hugging him and kissing him, and some of those women are niggas. So it becomes tamei because of that.
That's if they come to the house.
Yeah, but his own mother may well be tamei, but also you have his older sisters may be tamei nida. Other women may come visit the house, he may be playing outdoors, whatever, so that's the difference. Rashi learns that the child definitely touched the dough, and the only question is whether the child is tamei. Tosfos learns the other way around. The Tri and other Rishonim also learn like that. There's no question that the child is tamei. The question is whether he actually touched the dough or anybody gave him a piece of it.
Well, anyway, if he tried the dough in his hand, then obviously.
No, because that's the thing. Somebody else could have taken a piece of it and given it to him.
From there, who maybe was trying to
who it's much more likely was Tahr. If they know that Tahr, that it's Truma Dove, then a Tahr person is not going to touch it willy-nilly, yeah. Keep in mind, I mean, we're not stopping talking about that some stranger off the street would have come in. They're not going to feel free to take a piece of the dough and give it to him. It would have to be some member of the household, maybe, yeah. Anyway, so the point is, so we have a suffix now whether the dough became Tahr. So Rav Meir says that dough remains tahor. The Chum says it's tamei, but they should doubt to shatinah for tapeach, because it's common for a child to be metapeach. Now, you have Rashi and Tosfos disagreeing what metapeach means. Rashi learns that metapeach means a child often plays in areas where there's garbage. And you also have, where there's garbage, there are going to be shrotzim. And where there are shrotzim, some of them are going to be dead, and they're metamei. So therefore, there's a high likelihood that since a child regularly plays in such things, in garbage heaps, then there's a high likelihood that at some point he touched a dead sheretz or a piece of one. Remember, only even a piece of one, only the size of a lentil, makes a person tummy.
But if he hasn't had that instead, he can be tummy, but why did the whole batch be...
Because if he touched the batch when he was taking the piece, then he made the whole rest of the tummy.
And he still gave it to him.
That's the thing. Rashi doesn't learn that there's that possibility. Rashi is learning that, so maybe that's why the mayor says it's tougher, but the Chacham was saying, since Zayuk is Shotinuk for Tapeach, and therefore we know, Rashi says we take it as a given that he took from the dough. We don't assume that somebody else gave it to him. So therefore we take it as a given that now the only question is he Tomei or not? So the Chacham says, since Zayuk is Shotinuk for Tapeach, since he regularly plays in the garbage and in places where there are dead shrubs, where there may be dead shrubs, then therefore there are high likelihood he's tummy. And now.
It's only the mother's parents let him, but if he plays He plays outside.
Yeah, pretty much just we're talking about a kid who's often playing unsupervised. We're not talking about the parents, the helicopter parents, and watching him constantly. You know, if they're watching him constantly, that's something else. Anyways, Tosfos again learns differently. The Dauk Shaltinuk L'Tateach means it's common for a child to touch things that he's not supposed to. So the child is definitely Tomei. But now the question is whether he took it from the dough or whether a person who was Tahor came and took a piece of the dough and gave it to him. So now the mayor is going to say we can assume that there was an Adam Tahor, and the Chacham is going to say Dauk Shaltinuk L'Tateach means it's much more likely for the kid to touch things that he's not supposed to, in this case being the dough. So it's much more likely that he touched the dough and took a piece, so, and then he made the whole dough tummy.
He's not coming to Suffolk and he took a piece. He makes the whole sin
tough. Again, according to Rashi, it's a suffix whether he's tummy. According to Tosfos, it's the vade that he's tummy. If we knew that he was tummy, there's no question the dough is tummy.
Hopefully.
The whole thing, because when he touched it to remove a piece, then the whole thing becomes tummy. It's all one mess.
And you cut around at that part.
No, doesn't work that way. So Bahavina. So now the Gemara continues. So now we have a discussion within that Mishnah. My time did a mayor. Why is your mayor not concerned that the dough might be tummy? And the reason is, because the mayor holds like this. Roiv tinotus metapfin. It is true that most children are metapfin, meaning according to Rashi that they play around in the garbage, and according to Tosfos that they touch things they're not supposed to. All that's true. Umiot in metapfin. The fact is though, you have a miot who do not. And the Isa b'cheskos tara imedes. Now the dough itself has a cheskos tara to begin with. At one time it was known to be tahor dough. Therefore, so when you combine together the miut plus the chazaka, itra le'ruba, then that weakens the roiv. That makes it less likely to say it is true that we have a roiv of children, but once we have, together with the fact that we have a miut of children who don't, plus we have a chazaka on the dough, Rameo holds that combination of factors is strong enough to allow us to consider the dough tougher. Tosfos brings up a point over here also that Tosfos calls, this is not a roiv choshuv, it's a roiv garua. It's not an important roiv, but rather a less important roiv. Now Tosfos doesn't elaborate why that is. Achorinim explain, because the roiv we're talking about over here is not one that depends on natural forces, it's one that depends on somebody doing something. The child has to be metapeach in order to be part of the roiv. Well, very well. This child is not necessarily part of that roiv, and therefore, so it's a statistical roiv. It's the time the Gemara sometimes calls a ruba de lesse kamon. It's not where we have a roiv in front of us. It's just statistically that's how things work. But this is in a way even weaker than a ruba de lesse kamon, because it depends on is this child one of the type to actually do that to be metapeach. So therefore, Meir holds that combination of things is good enough. Rabbanon, as far as the Rabbanon, they say miuta command the lesser. They say you have to ignore the mute. In general, we find in Shas in various places where Reb Meir is concerned about the mute and the Chachamim are not. Usually that comes out l'chumra, that because of a mute, Reb Meir is going to be concerned about certain possibilities. Tosfos refers to a case at the end of Yevamos where you have that, for example. We have other examples throughout Shas where we see Reb Meir chayish l'miuta. Here it comes out of kula as a result of it. Whereas the Chachamim say you can't really take notice of the miut. The fact is it's a miut, so therefore you ignore it. So you have to consider you have a roiv. Miut to command the lesser dummy. The Chachamim say the miut is considered as though it exists. The ruba chazaka ruba adif. So when you have a roiv of children who are metapeach versus a chazaka of the dough, then the roiv wins out. So therefore, we have to assume the dough. Therefore, we have to assume the dough is tummy. Now that we establish that, now Omer Shlokish, or the Omer Shlokish, really, because this is a continuation of the previous part. The Shumer of Oshia Zuhi Shesofin Alas Atrumah. So now the Shlokish tells us in the name of Reb Oshia, once we establish that the Chachamim say the dough is tummy, and we explain why they say that, then this would actually be one of those kinds of chazakas where, because of it, we would actually burn the Truma. So that's when the Chacham say Metamin, Reish Lakish says in the name of Reb Oshia, it doesn't just mean that it's a suffix. It means we treat that truma as though it was Vadei Tomei and we burn it as Vadei Truma. So there, as Vadei Truma Tomei. So therefore we see, like Reb Yechanan, like Reish Lakish was saying before, Sofin ala Chazakas, that you can burn truma based on nothing more than a Chazaka. We don't have solid proof that this dough became Tomei, but nevertheless we have a Chazaka and Reish Lakish says that it's good enough for us to burn it.
the fact that we're talking about Solomon, we're talking about Kohanim over here, they'll probably be extra careful that.
That may be, but nonetheless, the fact is the door was left unattended, and now we see that a kid has a piece of it. So obviously something. So yeah, I mean, it's true. If it was Joe that was supposed to be kept Torah, yes, somebody should have been watching it the whole time. Obviously they would. They fell asleep on the job or whatever. That's not the point. Is that this is the situation we have? Anyway.
So you can't sell it.
You can't sell it. Nothing. The only thing you can do with Truma Tmei, you can. The only thing you can do with Truma Tmei is you can burn it as though it was firewood. So yeah, at least you get some hana out of it. There are actually and Tosfos argue elsewhere at Shas whether you'd be allowed to feed it to an animal, whether that's also the fact, whatever. Anyway, yeah. So that's Rav Shlokish. On the other hand, as we said, Rav Yechon Roma, ain't zu chazaka shesurf and allah as a truma. On the other hand, Rav Yechon said, no, that's not the kind of chazaka that you burn on, that you burn truma because of it. He would say that no, when the chachamim say metamin, they don't mean it's absolutely tame, they just mean toilin, you have to suspend it. You can't eat it, you can't burn it until one of two things happens. Either it becomes vadai tame and then you burn it, or it spoils and then you can also burn it, or you wait till Erev Pesach and it's chametz and then you also burn it. So one way or the other, eventually your
kid can tell you where you got it.
What? If the kid can tell you, yeah, I suppose maybe that also, yeah. Okay. And Rav Yechanan continues, Ela Ezu Chazaka Rav Yechanan Pesach and Alas Truma. Okay, so what kind of Chazaka would Rav Yechanan agree is good enough to burn Truma? So that would be Kedetznan. That would be like we learn in another Mishnah. Now this next one we're going to quote is not actually a Mishnah, but rather a Braisa. So on the slide here it says maybe it should be Kedetanya. Although the Rashba points out a general rule that we can keep in mind for many such Gemaras, he says often when the Gemara quotes a braisa, which is very strongly based on a Mishnah, then therefore the Gemara can introduce it with Dittanan. So even though it is a braisa technically, and it's not part of the Mishnah, but because he says the isle ikur of a Mishnah, it has like there's a source for what it's saying in the Mishnah, then the Gemara can introduce it with the word Dittanan. Anyway, so we have the following braisa. Isa b'soch habayis. If you have again a batch of dough in the house, you have shrotim as well as frogs that are wandering around over there. And Rashi explains metaplan shum means not only they're crawling around, but pieces of them are falling off. Now a frog is not one of the shmona shrotim, but you have some of the other shmona shrotim resemble frogs. In fact, the first one in the list is the second one on the list, hatsav. Rashi translates that on the pasuk. He gives a French word for it, and he says shadoyma l'tzardeya. It resembles a frog. So b'pashkas Rashi means a toad. The actual word the actual French word that Rashi uses is not quite so clear in present day print, but it seems that Rashi is referring to a toad. A toad is a separate species. They're related to frogs, but there are differences. In particular, frogs usually have smooth skin. Toads have scaly and wrinkled skin. Whatever, there's differences. And according to that, toad would be one of the Shemona Shrotzim. But even if not, the point is, there are some of the Shemona Shrotzim that superficially resemble frogs in some way. They're both little creatures. If you see a little creature crawling around, you may not notice on first glance which one it is. Anyway, the point is, here you have that both of them, pieces are falling off of them as they're crawling around. And a piece of a sheretz is going to be a tamid. So therefore, if a piece of a sheretz lands on the dough, it's going to be tamid. If a piece of a frog lands on the dough, it won't be tamid. So then we say, the braisa says, later on we find pieces of these creatures in the dough, and we don't know whether those pieces are from the frogs or from the shrotzim. We would probably say nowadays just throw out the whole dough. The whole thing is disgusting. But, you know, back then, I guess people weren't as picky. Anyway, it's expensive after all. Yeah. Anyways, so the braisa says, Im roiv shrotzim tmeya. If most of the creatures in the house are shrotzim, then the dough is tamei. Im roiv tzfargim tahora. If most of them are frogs, then it's tahor. So now the Yechon is saying this is the kind where if we have a suffix about it, now the difference is now we have a stronger chazaka, because now we have the house itself has a chazaka that there are shrutz in it. So now we have, so Rashi says, we have a chazaka plus a ruba de ise kamon, because we have a chazaka that the house is full of shrubsim, and we have ruba de ise kamon, namely we have a roi that we could actually count. If we were to go and count the number of creatures that are in the house, we would find that there are actually more shrubsim than svarim. As opposed to the case with the child and the doe, is a chazaka plus a ruba de lese kamon. We don't have a roi in front of us that we know that this child touched shrotzim or touched the dough or not. It's a statistical one that most children touch things and a miyut doesn't. So this is a much stronger kind of chazaka, a much stronger kind of stuffing, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan would say that's good enough reason to actually ruin the terumah. And the Gemara says, Tanya Kavaseh Rav Yochanan. In fact, we learn a Braisa, like, and by the way, Tosfos points out, again, another point is that this Roiv is a strong Roiv, because unlike the Roiv we said with the child, which is only a Roiv Garua, because the child, this particular child, may not necessarily be one of the ones who touches, here we have a Roiv involving natural things. We have Shrotzim and Saudim around here, right? So Tanya Kavaseh Rav Yochanan. In fact, we learn a Braisa like what Rav Yochanan says. The Braisa says Shnei Dvorim Ein Bahem Das Lishoel. Now we have like this. One of the rules of Sofik Tuma is, now where we learn the whole concept of Sofik Tuma when we say it's Tomer, we learn it from the Soita. Because a Soita, yeah. You have there's a Yochid, it's one on one, and we say Misofik Shis Tomer. And therefore we have Birshus Yochid versus Birshus Rabim. Now we also have a rule in it called Ein by Das Lishoel versus Yesh by Das Lishoel. Meaning the Soita is a grown woman. We can ask her what happened. She can tell us. Now she may tell us that she's not Tome. We can't necessarily believe her. We have to go through the whole Soita process to establish it. But we can ask her what happened, and she would have the ability to tell us one way or the other. So therefore, we learn from that when do we say Sotot Tome versus a Yochid is Tome only if Yesh by Das Lishoel, only if we're talking about a person who has the Das to be asked what happened. And he may say, I'm not sure, for example. But as opposed to a little kid, like we're talking about before, involving the doe, is Ein Bo Das Lishoel. Similarly, animals are Ein Bo Das Lishoel, Kalim, etc. So usually we say, when Ein Bo Das Lishoel, then we say that a Sofik Tumah, even Rishos HaYochid, is Tumah. Even though it's Rishos HaYochid, but because Ein Bo Das Lishoel, most cases we say that a Sofik is going to be Tumah because Ein Bo Das Lishoel. So we have a suffix, for example, there's a certain keli become tomei. For example, you have a keli sitting there in your chotzer, and you don't know whether a sheriff touched it or not. Then when the yachotzer is a rishos yachid, or your house, let's say, is a rishos yachid, but since the keli is ein bar das lishoel, then we can assume it's tomer. However, the Braisa says, shnei dvarim ein bar das lishoel. There are two cases when ein bar das lishoel, v'asom chachomim, kemashi yesh bar das lishoel. The chachomim treated it as though they have Das Lishoel and declared them Tomei because of a Sofik in Rishos HaYochid. Tinek v'oid acheres. One is the case of a child, and the other one is another one. So, Tinek kodamoran, the one with the child, is what we just said. And again, so we're going to say, we consider that Yesh Bam Das Lishoel, therefore we apply the usual rule of Sofik Tumah Rishos HaYochid, and we say, therefore, that the dough, we can't burn the dough, because we don't know it's Tomei Vadei, but we can be toilet. And the other one is Acheres, V'oid Acheres, Ma'ihi. What is the other one? Is a case like this. Another case involving dough. Issa b'seich habayis, you have a batch of dough of truma in the house, v'tarnigolim u'mashkin tmeim shom. You have in that house, there are also chickens, and there are also liquids that are tomei. Now, if the liquids touch the dough, they're going to make it tomei. Now, v'nimtzu nikurim v'issa. Later on, we come back, and we find that there are marks of pecking in the dough. So obviously, at some point, one of the chickens went and pecked at the dough to eat a little bit of it. So now the question is, the chickens themselves are not tomei. No living creatures can ever become tomei except for people. So there's no question, the chickens themselves is not the problem. The question is, maybe did the chickens drink some of the mashkin tmeim and then, with their beaks still wet, go and peck at the dough? It doesn't matter if it's a minimum. There's no minimum shear that you need for mashing tomato to make something tomato. So that's the problem. So the Braisa says, Tolin, we have to suspend that truma. Loy Oichlin, Loy Sofer. We can't eat it. We can't burn it. So that's another example where even though in Baidas Lishol, because after all, you can't ask the chickens what happened, nevertheless, we treat it as though Yesh Baidas Lishol and say, therefore we say that the dough is Suffolk Tommy. Usually we would have said, even though it's in Rosh Hashanah Yachid, it would have been Tomer because Ein Baidas Lishol, but in this case, we say this is one of those cases where we say Sveik Tomer. So therefore we see what Rabbi Yochanan was saying before, that there is, now when it came to the case of the Shrotzim and Tzfardim, there we say that was a much stronger kind of Roy, and therefore we say that's enough to even burn Shroma, but the two cases we see, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that the case of the child and the case of the, and the case of the chickens is both turban. We suspend the Shroma, we don't burn it, but we don't eat it either. So there is, it does actually mention in a Mishnah in Masechet Taharos, it's true, it does depend how far the water is, because yeah, if the water is far away, then we can assume that the Mishnah talks about over there more, not just the distance, but also what kind of animal are we talking about. Why are we mentioning dafka chickens? You could have conceivably, there's an animal in the house, the same thing, because the Gemara, the Mishnah discusses over there, different kinds of animals have different habits as far as after they've drunk, whether they, like they wipe their mouth, sort of, before, so that with certain kinds of animals, there's a possibility by the time they reach the dough, then their mouth is already dry, they already dried off their mouth by eating something else, or whatever, by rubbing their mouth against something else, and therefore it's not talking. So yeah, that factors in as well. However, now, the Gemara says, by the way, in connection with this din with the chickens, it depends. All of this would apply only when the liquids are white or clear. So therefore, so now, if the chicken, it drank some of the water, and now with a wet beak went and pecked at the dough, you wouldn't be able to tell, because it's clear, it's a clear liquid, and you wouldn't be able to tell any trace of it on the dough. Avo the mashkin tsvui, avo mashkin adumim, but he says, if it's red liquid, im isa denoku made the yoda. Then if it pecked at the dough with a wet beak, you would know it, because you would see some of the color, some of the red on the surface of the dough. However, the Gemara asks, the Duma Blatinu Issa, why? You could have the chicken pecked at the dough with a wet beak, where it was wet with red liquids, and now it got absorbed into the dough, and therefore you don't see the color on the surface. So how do you have a proof from that? So in fact, Amar Rav Yochanan, Dover Zeshom Beribi, or Shom Beribi, which means a great Talmud Chacham, in this case, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Rashi explains over here and in other places in Shas, that Beribi means Gadol Hadur, the greatest person in the generation. So he heard the statement that there's a difference between white and red, or Pirusha Leshoma, but he didn't hear the reason behind it. He didn't hear the reason so much, but the explanation. He should have explained that within white versus red, there is in fact a difference. What is it? Lo shana alav mashkin tzlulin. The difference really is even within one color versus another, it depends. Was the liquid clear? And how do we define clear? Where you would be able to see the reflection of a child or of anybody else for that matter in the water. When the water or any liquid is that clear, even when we're talking about a red liquid, yes, there is a possibility that it got absorbed into the dough and you don't see any of it on the surface. Therefore, we have to assume the dough is tummy, or at least we have to be toiling. On the other hand, avamashkim achorim, but if it's cloudy liquids, which are so cloudy that you can't see a reflection of a person in them, loy, then we wouldn't say there's a problem, because then if the chicken pecked at the dough with some of that liquid on its beak, we would see some of the residue of it on the surface of the dough, and if we don't, then we can assume, then we have every reason to believe that by the time the chicken pecked at the dough, its beak was already dry.
Even if it's wet, it's such a minimum that it dries up so very quick.
That's true, but if it's achorim, if it's cloudy liquid, then it means there's going to be some residue of it. There's going to be some the water in it may evaporate, okay. But you're still going to have whatever was dissolved in the water is going to be on the surface over there, and therefore you'd be able to see it. So if you don't see it, then we're good. So the difference is not, in other words, so there's two ways of explaining it really. Do we mean that do we mean that white liquid, it's always going to be tome, because you may not see any residue, and when it comes to red liquids, we have to distinguish between clear and cloudy ones. For example, let's say you have clear red wine, which is clear enough to see a reflection in, versus cloudy red wine, maybe which is not. Or is it that the Rambam learns that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing on Rabbi Shulchan Levi and saying it's really no difference of the color, it's only a difference of the consistency of the liquid. Now, from here, the next few Mishnayos are going to deal with Dinim of Yichud. So now that we've spent much of the Masechta talking about Dinim of Kiddushin, and ultimately after Kiddushin, you're going to have a marriage and the husband and wife are going to be together. So now we have to talk about the Din that an unrelated man and woman are not allowed to be together. So we're going to talk about all those Din. The Mishnah says, Lo yisyach an Adam im shtei noshim. A man is not allowed to be alone together with two women. Because, as the Gemara is going to say, noshim daitim kalos, women are very easily distracted, and so therefore you may have that he may seduce both of them, or one of them, and then the other one will cover up for her. So therefore you can't do that. But one woman is allowed to be together with two men because they'd be embarrassed to each other. Now we're going to see in the Gemara, it's actually not so simple. We're going to distinguish in the Gemara between different categories of men in terms of how careful they are with dinei tznius. You do in fact have a halacha that says that if the men are prutzim, then even two is not enough. So you have it gets complicated. Nowadays we have to assume many people are prutzim, and therefore we can't necessarily have yichud of two men with one woman either. Rav Shimon Omer. Rav Shimon says, even one man can be alone with two women as long as his wife is with him, because his wife will prevent him from doing anything. She's gonna see to it that he's not gonna be mezana with any of these women. Now Tosfos discusses that, Rav Shimon would say that, Rav Shimon would agree that you still can't have that. Tosfos says what Rav Shimon means is, in other words, if you have three women over there, two other women plus his wife, then it'll be mutter. But just to have one woman together with his wife, Tosfos says it sounds like it would be ulcer. So then Tosfos discusses in the light of a different Gemara in Avodah Zarah that implies differently. So Tosfos says that no, Rav Shimon is saying only when ein ishta imoy, then it's also. but the Chachamim would say that it's allowed with one other woman and his wife. And in fact, Tosfos discusses different gersois over here. HaGros HaGro actually has a long arichos over here where he starts out by saying a very sharp thing. He says the gersa of Tosfos and Rif is not correct. He says in the gersa that they have in our Mishnah, which puts the Bizman Sheishta Imay as part of Rav Shimon's statement. So he explains that, so he goes and explains that actually the Ishta Imay is really referring back to, is really referring back to the Chachamim, that even the Chachamim is saying that even the Chachamim are talking about when Ishta Imay. So you have different opinions on the subject, in short. continues the Mishnah. The Yoshin Imonim Pundaki, and in fact, when a man's wife is with him, they can even all, there can be other women with them, and they're sleeping all together in an inn, because his wife is going to watch him and make sure that he doesn't fool around with them, says Rav Shimon. continues the Mishnah. Now, a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother or with his daughter. As far as a sister is an interesting thing, the Mishnah does not mention a sister, and there is in fact some discussion about that. After all, we're going to say a man is not allowed to be alone with any arayas, and an erva sister is certainly an erva. It's true that Amshik Nesagirla took away the Yetzirah for close relatives, but nevertheless, still you have the concern. Lemaisa, the poskim say, the poskim discuss in some detail, a brother and sister are allowed to be alone in Yichud on a temporary basis. But for example, they can't live alone together for long periods of time. Rav Moshe, for example, has an interesting tshuva on the subject where he says, say, for example, a couple has only one boy and one girl. So most of the time, there's not a problem. Most of the time, the parents are home. So therefore, there's no problem. If you have, let's say, he says, if the parents are going to be going away for a few weeks on a trip or something, then they should talk and make sure that there's a chaperone staying at home with so that the brother and sister are not alone. But other than that, he also says, let's say, for example, what if a brother is boarding with his sister, for example, or the other way around. So he says, basically, it really depends on how it's set up. If it's set up that he might leave any time, or she might leave any time, then that's considered bakrai, and sort of thing would be allowed. But if they're making a clear of it, then not. Okay, continues the Mishnah. The Yoshin Imohim, the Kirub Basar. Not only is a man allowed to be in Yichud with his mother or with his daughter, because again, a person doesn't normally have it's not just the fact that a person doesn't usually have a taiva for them because of the Anshet Nesagola. The Gemara is actually going to bring a hint from a Posiv for the fact from a Posiv in Chumash that a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother. So even before the Anshet Nesagola, usually it was assumed, at least as far as a mother, that a normal person doesn't have a taiva for his mother. You have the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, for example, that Omar, in one of the later kings of Yehuda, was Mizana with his mother, and she says to him, he gives you an out-and-out Roshi, a terrible Averis, and his mother says to him, I mean, do you even have a Hanav, this is the thing? And he says, I'm only doing it Lahachs. So yeah, anyway. So a man can be alone with his mother or with his daughter, and the Yoshin Imohim, the Kirubasar, and in fact, they're even allowed to sleep skin touching skin.
In those days,
it was a very common thing to do. It would help warm each other up. The Pasuk in Kehelas that says, Yishvu Shnayim B'cham Lahem, if two people lie together in a bed, they'll be warm. Ola Echad Eif Yecham, you have one person sleeping by himself, how's he supposed to warm up? Because body heat, where they would help, they would warm each other up with their body.
Unfortunately, during the Pentecost, 50-60 years ago, my grandmother told me that they stayed alive because they were on the edge.
They were during the Holocaust in the barracks. Yeah, you had examples like that. But even not under such conditions, even in the olden times, it was more common that people would sleep together for warmth. Yeah. Anyway, however, the Mishnah continues. The imhigdulu, once they grow old enough, zu yishena b'ksusa, v'zei yoshen b'ksusa, then each one of them has to sleep in their own clothing. They can sleep in the same bed still, the mother and daughter, the mother and son, or the father and daughter, but they have to be clothed. They can't be skin-to-skin contact anymore. Later on, by the way, at the end of the parak, Rashi explains that a man is not allowed to be in Yichud even with many women. Tosfos disagrees and says, again, similar to the Tosfos over here, that it's really only a problem with two women, unless the Mishnah later on is talking about, particularly you have a person that Isgoyim Anoshim, you have certain kinds of men who do business that involves women a lot, like selling women's items or whatever, perfumes or whatever, but regular men, Tosfos learns, would be allowed to be in Yichud with three women. So the Gemara starts off. My Tanya, why is there this issue of Yichud even with two women? On the face of it, or isn't there one of the women will blab on the other? And the answer is, like we said, Tonet Ve'eliyahu, Herba Noshim Daitan Kalis, because Noshim Daitan Kalis, and it's very easy to distract them and very easy to be mafata them, and then you have problems. He might actually be mafata both of them, he might be mafata one and the other one will be quiet or whatever, the Gemara continues, where do we know this concept of Yichud in the first place? Now, by the way, you have two different kinds of Yichud. You have Yichud with a woman who's actually also to him min haTorah, and then you have Yichud with a Pnuya. The first kind is what the Gemara is going to be dealing with over here, the fact that this woman is also to him min haTorah, and therefore he's not allowed to be in Yichud with her. The concept of Yichud Pnuya, that you're not allowed to be alone with an unmarried girl, that came later. That came in the time of Javanah Malach, when you have the story of Amnon and Tamar, where they were biologically half brother and sister, because both of them, their father was David. She was born from Yifas Toyah, so she wasn't considered born Jew, she was a Gioris. Anyway, you have the whole story over there where Amnon lured her into his house and raped her. So after that, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the Chachamim made the Takana of the Chachamim of David's time, then made the Takana of Isur Yichud with a Pnuya as well. Before then, it was only with relatives or an Eshos Eish or whatever. So Manohan Emili, where do we know that there's this issue of Yichud, but that there's an exception for a mother? So Amar Rabbi Yechon, Rishum Rabbi Shmuel, Remez Yichud Menat Torah Minayin. Where is there a hint in the, for Yichud in the Torah? Now there's a machlokas Rishonim. When we're saying it's a hint, does that mean nevertheless it isn't Isur Daraisa, or do we mean it's an Isur Darabanan? And this is basically only an Asmata. Anyway, so where do we know this from? Shenema, the pasuk says, Ki Yisischa Achicha Ben Imecha. The pasuk says about the mitzvah that you have, that you can have a mesis, a person who convinces somebody to worship Avodah Zarah, where the Torah says you're not allowed to listen to him and you have to bring him to Beis Din and have him executed, etc. So the pasuk introduces it by saying, if your mother, the son of your, if your brother, the son of your mother, tries to convince you to worship Avodah Zarah, and then it lists a few other relatives in the pasuk as well. It mentions your son, your daughter, your wife, or your friend. Anyway. Would only a maternal brother, where you have a mother in common, would only he be mesis ben av ein mesis, and a brother from the same father would not? Why is the Mishnah, why is the pasuk rather saying the word ben imecha instead of just achicha? So the reason is ela loy malach. So it comes to hint to you as follows. Ben siachad im ima, a son is allowed to be in yichud with his mother. Therefore, in other words, another son of that same mother is more likely to be there as well, and therefore he's more likely to be. Now, sasa usually happens in secret. The pasuk itself uses the word baseser in secret. So in other words, because nobody's going to go do that in public, because they know they're going to get in deep trouble. So what is it? So this woman has sons from two different husbands. She has a son Reuven from one husband and a son Yosef from another. Reuven is allowed to be in yichud with his mother. Therefore, it's more likely that Yosef, at some point, her son from another husband, is going to be there as well, and Yosef might try to talk Reuven into worshipping Avodah Zarah. So we have a hint from that a son can be in Yichud along with his mother, because otherwise there's no way that they would be in secret together like this. But also, they siachadim call arayas from a Torah, but you're not allowed to be in Yichud with any other arayas in the Torah. So that gives us the exception for the son and the mother, and therefore also, by extension, the father and the daughter, but that's it. The Pnei Yeshua actually has an interesting explanation. He says, this is a little bit of a doichet to say, because you're mentioning Beni Mecha, that means you're allowed to be in Yichud with his mother. He says, actually what the Gemara is learning is like this. In all that catalog of relatives that it mentions in the pasuk, it mentions your brother, your son, your daughter, your wife. It's missing your sister. Why does it mention if your sister tries to be basis you to Avodah Zarah? That hints at the point, says Pnei Yeshua, because a brother and a sister are not allowed to be in Yichud together. And that applies to Kol Arayis Shabbat Torah. So therefore, there's less of a possibility that his sister might try to be Mesis in. Okay, the Gemara says, Pashtid Krub Maiksir. Let's look at what is the pshat of the Pasuk. So we have a remez from this Pasuk then that a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother, but not with any other Arayis. What is the pshat of the Pasuk? Why is it mentioning your brother from your mother? So I'm going to buy a loy miboya karma, because the Pasuk is telling us one of these things needless to say. Loy miboya ben ap. Needless to say, that you shouldn't listen to a son of your father, of a paternal brother. Needless to say, you would know not to listen to him. Your son, Elay, because after all, he may not like you, because after all, you're his rival for the Yerusha. You and he eventually are going to be Yaushining your father's Yerusha together. So if you're only half brothers, then he's only Ben Avicha, then he's more likely to not have your best interests in mind. He would rather see that you're out of the picture so that he can get more of a Yerusha for himself. So therefore, needless to say, but obviously, eats his royce, so he's more likely to give bad advice, so you would know not to listen to him. El Afilu Ben Ein, even a brother from your mother, Deloitte Sonilei, has nothing against you because you're not in line to Yaushin the same Yerusha. You're each going to be Yaushin from your respective fathers. So you would think maybe you should listen to him. Maybe what he's telling you is good advice. And therefore, Kamash Malan, therefore the Pasuk is telling you that no, realize that what he's telling you is bad advice. Don't even think to listen to him. As it continues in the Pasuk. So that's the pshat of the Pasuk, why it says Ben. Now, the Gemara says, name a masnissin deloy to Abba Shol. Do we have to say that our Mishnah is not like Abba Shol when our Mishnah says that a man is not allowed to be alone with two women, where it seems that Abba Shol says different? Namely, a braisis d'tanya, kol shlut, now a baby, eventually a child grows up enough that if Rahman al-Fani passes away, then you're going to have a full levaya for him. But when a baby is young, then you don't have a full-fledged levaya. So a braisa says, kol shloshim yoim, if a baby Rachman Otzlan dies within 3 days, Yotze Bechek, you take him out in the bosom, meaning you don't have an actual mitter, you don't have an actual mitter or anything like that, or an orin or anything like that for him. You just somebody just carries him in their arms. V'nikba b'isha achas u'shnei anoshim. Who goes to the burial? You can have one woman and two men, meaning you don't have to have a full crowd for the levaya. It's enough to have three people. On the other hand, avaloi b'isha achas u'shnei anoshim, but you cannot have one man and two women because of the problem of yichud. Abba Shol says you could have one man and two women. So it sounds like Abba Shol would disagree with our Mishnah and say that yichud is allowed between one man and two women. The answer is no. Afilotema Abba Shol. No, you could say that our Mishnah even goes maybe like Abba Shol because B'shas Aninus Toru Yitzre. Because at the time of Aninus, when they're sad over the baby died, then the Yitzahara is broken and therefore they're less likely to commit Znus. Dvir Rabbanan, what would the Chachamim answer to that, who disagree even in that case? They would say, on the contrary, Savri Lak Rav Yitzchak. They hold like what Rav Yitzchak said. The Amr Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak says, let's look at a Pasuk in Eicha. The Pasuk says, Ma Yisoinen Odom Choy Gevra Hatav. Now, the simple meaning of Yisoinen is complain. Why should a person complain? Why should a person complain as long as he's alive and say that Hashem is causing things to happen to him that he doesn't like so much? Geber achatov, a person should realize that he has lots of averus, so therefore he may deserve what's coming to him. But the chachamim are darshin yisoinen meloshin aninus, meloshin mourning. Afilu b'shas aninus yishal adam yitzur misgaber olav. Even when a person is in a state of aninus, then his yetzahara still tries to overpower him. In other words, they take out the positive. What good is aninus? You would think that at least aninus does good and that it weakens his yetzahara. No, even in a time like that, gevra hatov, he better overcome his chatoim, or else his yetzahara is going to get the better of him. So therefore, the chachamim say, even in a time like that, when there's a leviah for a little kid, then you still can't have yichud. The Abba Shol, now what does Abba Shol answer to that? How does he explain the pasuk? He says, ki ka'omer, ki ksivahu, v'misraim amadois of ksiv. The pasuk means what we explained in Pshat. It means the pasuk is talking about a person who's complaining about what Hashem does for him. So the pasuk is saying, "My yisraim amidosav." How can a person be misonin as in complaining about his averus? Is he a master over his chatoim? Can he guarantee that he hasn't done any averus and he's living because he did it and he has life and everything because he deserves it? You should realize the very fact that he's alive itself is a big gift from Hashem, and therefore we have nothing to complain about. So therefore, Abba Shol says the pasuk is not talking about what happens, how a person feels in a state of aninus. The pasuk is telling us a musa jirasha, don't think when things that happen that don't seem to be so good, don't start complaining against Hashem. Realize that you owe the Eibishter a lot more than he owes you. So the Gemara says v'rabbanan. Now, what are the chachamim answer for that? They say the fact is we can give you an example where even at a time of aninus, even you want to say like you Abba Shol are saying tovu yitzrei. Fine, maybe a person's yetzahara to a certain extent is broken at such a time. Fine, what if there's no aninus over there? What if they're faking it? There was a case with a certain woman, there was a story where they took him out. Now, what does that mean? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that they pretended that a baby was dead and took it out as though there was going to be a levaya, and really, they were doing it in order to have an opportunity to commit znus. So therefore, the Chachamim was saying to Abba Shol, you're saying when there's aninus, a person's yetzahara is broken. Fine, but what if there's no aninus? What if they're faking the whole thing? That's one explanation, Rashi says. Then Rashi brings another explanation, is that it's not v'rabbanon, and it's not da'ahu ogdav, da'ahu ogdav apikdei, but rather that this line, ki'ahu ma'itzadai hi'itza, is a continuation of Abba Shol's statement. Abba Shol is saying, don't complain against Hashem, because you should realize you owe Hashem a lot. For example, we have a case of Ahi Itza of a certain woman where one of her, the Rashi refers to a Gemara in Moed Katan, So now the Gemara tells us over there, there's a limit how much mourning a person should do when their relative passes away. You have 3 days, that's a normal time for crying, 7 for Shiva, then you have Shloshim and 12 months, etc. But a person should not go and then be excessively mourning more than that. Because then it's like showing that he doesn't agree with Hashem's judgment. So therefore, so the Gemara tells a story over there, and Rashi says that's according to one Girsa, that's what the Gemara means over here. There was a woman whose son passed away, and she was in total grief over it, much more than expected. And then people were telling her that you know what, you have to eventually accept Hashem's judgment, and she didn't. And then the result of that is another one of her children passed away, and so forth, until all of them, because she never accepted Hashem's judgment. So Tosfos also refers to that over here and says that's another explanation. So Abishol is saying, the Pasuk is saying, my disownin adam koi, what are the person complaining as long as he's alive about how Hashem is treating him? He should realize, Gevra Hatov, does he think that he's master over his Averis and he hasn't committed Averis? A person has to accept the judgment of Hashem, as you see from the example of this woman who does not, and Rahman al-Fan, tragedies happen. Tosfos themselves brings a different girsa but a different explanation from Rabbeinu Hanano with the words in the Gemara over here, i.e. itza da'ava ubdava pikde. So Rashi had said it means that they pretended that a baby was dead and really it was alive and they took it out to be mezan. Tosfos brings a different other explanation. What happened once, there was a woman whose husband had passed away, and she's by his caver over there, and she's crying profusely. Meanwhile, there was a nearby over there, there was a man who had been hanged by order of the government, and there was somebody there watching the body to make sure that the relatives don't steal it away or something. Anyway, so now this guard decides he has an opportunity to get it on with the Salmona, so he convinces her, and then they go off, they do their thing, he comes back, he doesn't find the body over there, now he's in trouble, now he was supposed to be guarding this body to make sure they don't steal it away, and he slacked off on the job and went to do something else. So the woman tells him, you know what, go unbury my husband's body from his grave and hang it up there instead of that, and that way you won't get in trouble. So we see that even in a time of aninus, she's so sad over her husband, but nevertheless she's willing to sacrifice him for this kind of thing. So that's another example where even it's a weird story, but the point is, even at a time of aninus, even in a time of avelos, you can have people do things like that in order to cover up for their avelos. So therefore, the Chachamim are saying that based on that, then you can't just say that any time there's a Leviathan, there's not going to be a problem with Yetzer Hara, even then there might be, because we see even this woman, her husband was in fact dead, and she's crying for him, and nevertheless she was seduced into Aveira and so forth.
So you don't see that there's so mapped like
that's true. Says maybe there should be more mapped. There are places, I think, where they have a minute that women don't go to Leviathan at all because of these kinds of considerations. So yeah. So now the Gemara continues a little bit. The Mishnah had said, Aval Isha Achas, we said one woman is allowed to be alone with two men, but the Gemara says it depends. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Lo Shonam El B'Ksherim. That applies only if these men are kosher. They're not koshered on things involving Znus, so our rights. Aval B'Prutim, but when they're people who are not so careful about such things, then even 10 men, a woman, even 10 person, a woman wouldn't be allowed to be with. In fact, it one time happened that 10 men carried out one woman in a mitzvah pretending that she was dead in order to be able to have a chance for Znus. And the Gemara says, Amr of Yosef, Teda, you can prove this, that many times people who do Averis are not embarrassed of one another as long as they're all in the Averis together. The Mechabri Be'ah Sar V'Gandhi Kshura, it can happen. For example, what if people want to steal a beam? A beam is a heavy thing. One person can't carry it by himself. 10 people may join together to steal it. And they're not embarrassed of one another. So you see that when it comes to people collaborating to do an Avera, then they're not embarrassed of each other. Well, the Gemara says, name a Messiah. Should we say that the following Mishnah from Sota supports what Rav is saying? The Mishnah talks over there about a Sota. We know that the Sota is also to have relations with her husband from when she becomes a Sota until she drinks the May Sota. Right, so the Mishnah says, Moshe and Loshnei Tamar Chachamim, they give him two from the local base din, gives him two Tamar Chachamim to travel along with them, Shema Yavei Aleha Baderech, because otherwise he might have relations with her on the way. And the point is, not only is that also, but also it would prevent the May Sota from working. The May Sota will not work if they had a Via Asura like that, and therefore it's going to cause that the name of Hashem is going to be erased for nothing. So that's going to be Motzi Laz. So apparently Tamar HaChamim ain't in Shadal Meloi. So apparently it has to have to be Tamar HaChamim, not just regular people. So that would bear out Rav's point. Regular people might be Purutzim. Tamar HaChamim, we can assume, are Kshavim. And therefore we see that therefore it's allowed with three. Like Moses says, no. Shiny Tamar HaChamim, no. There's a different reason why Tamar HaChamim are different. Why we send along Davka Tamar HaChamim. Diyadi Vasruyin, they will know to give him, they will know to give him Asura to warn him. You should know, if you have relations with her any time during this trip, then the water will not work, and you emotes lies, and you emotes causing shame shamayim to be erased for nothing, etc. So therefore, they're capable of giving him that warning, whereas regular Amei Oretz might not know of that, or he might not believe them, etc. So therefore, that would be a reason for them, and Chachamim doesn't necessarily prove Rav's point about Kshedim versus Pritzim. So the Gemara continues a little bit. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Lo Shanu El Be'ir. Furthermore, this rule about a woman being allowed to be alone with two men who are kshedim is only in the city. Al-Baderech, but if it's on the road, Ad-Shiyu Shloisha, then there have to be at least three. And for that matter, then Amar brings in Shulchan Aruch that by night also, even in the city, two are not enough. You would need a minimum of three. And again, they'd have to be kshedim, not person. So one, what's wrong on the road with two? Shemi yitzdarech echan, so avabaderech adshi yushloisha. Shemi yitzdarech echaman lahashdin, because one of them might have to go to the bathroom, or, Rashi has a bit of a different view of something, the cover. He may have to go for a while, you know, which in that case he has to go far away for tznius. The nimsa echam is yachanim erva, and then you have one man alone with an erva, and that's no good.
So maybe because, the one person goes away, it could be,
robbers?
No, like not malachim. It could be used to have those days that had a quiet place.
Shadim? That's something else. That's true. There may be an issue with Shadim, but we're not focusing on that over here. But we're focusing on that if one of them has to go. So the gears that we have in the mission of a hashtag to urinate would mean even if it's for only a short amount of time. The gears that Rashi has on a cover would imply that he has to go for Durban, which may take a while. And in particular, not only it may take a while, but also he has to go further away so people don't see his uncovered skin, as the Gemara tells us in Bracha. So yeah. So the Gemara says, name a Messiah. Again, can we say that we can support what Rav says from that same Mishnah in Sota? Most of the Tamar HaChamim, Shem Yavei Ola Baderach. Why do they have to give him two Tamar HaChamim to go with them so he doesn't have relations with her on the way? Today the Ihu HaTlasa. Why? Apparently because you have to have two Tamar HaChamim plus him for a total of three. So that would show Rav's point that on the road you need at least three. But the Gemara says that's not a solid proof. Hasan Kech Nevu Ale Sadi. The reason you need two Tamar HaChamim is to be adios against him. In case he does have relations with her, they can testify in front of Basket, and that way they won't go through with the whole search process. That doesn't necessarily prove that you need three on the road. Nevertheless, we haven't schlugged up Rav either, and the halacha is in fact like that.
That's
so you need a minute. So when it's prusim, then there's no, that when it's prusim, then no number helps really. When it's kshelim, then if it's in the city and during the day, then two are enough. If it's by night or if it's on the road, then you need three. And you also have the din that we mentioned in our Mishnah about ishto imo, where many times if a man's wife is together with him, then that's enough to mitigate the issue of yichud. And we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow about various dinim with that, Pesach Pasuach and other such things like that.
I would say by day, it's more serious because by day you can see a person if you have to go further away.
That's true, but on the other hand, that's.
And then you can't read the doctor, don't like.
Well, that's why we're saying the city versus the road. If we're in the city, then he doesn't necessarily have to go that far away. But,
it doesn't matter.
Whatever. In the city, there's lots of people around, so therefore there's less of an issue in the first place. Yeah. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.